at any time of the day or night. Technology allows us now to connect with people all over the world. Tweeting, texting, emailing, instant messaging, Facebooking anyone, FaceTiming anyone, anywhere, anytime. But whatever happened to good old-fashioned face-to-face chatting? Now, there are it's a big range now of experts and academics who believe that all this relentless connection isn't making us better communicators. In fact, it's making us into lonely souls. We've lost the art of conversation. We've replaced it with more exchanges, but often superficial and meaningless ones. Louise Howland wants to restore real conversations to our technology-saturated lives, and she's found an unlikely ally, a former glam rocker from the 1970s, Keith Lamb, who once wrote songs for Status Quo and was the frontman of an Australian band you may remember called Hush. Anyway, Keith Lamb and Louise Howland have come up with a game called The Art of Conversation. And Louise Howland is in New Zealand at the moment, and she's on the line with us now from Auckland. Hello, Louise.
Hello, Jim.
Nice to talk to you.
Pleasure to be here.
How does a former, I think you were a psychiatric nurse, a music teacher, you were a columnist for Embroidery and Cross Stitch magazine, you're a talented woman. How did you get involved in creating tools for enhancing conversation, please?
Keith's concept, the rock world is pretty rarefied, and when he was in that rock world, he was used to communicating via interviews and through people complimenting him. And when that world slowed for him, Jim, he came to me and he said, it's called TAOC, The Art of Conversation, and it's going to be a way that helps me have genuine, real communications with lots and lots of different sorts of people because I have lost the art of conversation.
How fascinating. So he had to relearn it himself.
He had to relearn it himself. And like with many of Keith's ideas, I thought about it for a while and I thought about myself as well because I'm quite a shy person and really I could probably happily live at home with my animals and my garden and my books and my piano. But part of me loves people as well. But when somebody invites me to a party, I would be just terrified. You know, I think, oh, not feeling socially overly competent. So lots of reasons led to this, and we thought, you know, we need it. Let's do it for us. And that's what happened. We got together a core group of people from all sorts of walks of life, all different ages, and we set out to try to discover some sort of formula, if you like, some guidelines to what makes a really great conversation and what helps people communicate well. You mentioned technology in your introduction, and I think that's just one of the many, many reasons we need to make sure that we do communicate well.
Okay, so it's not just for the shy and the socially awkward, it's for the people. And you, am I inferring this correctly? You probably think a larger mass of people who are losing, like Keith did, the art of conversation.
I think so, because lots of things led us to believe we weren't alone in thinking this was lost. As you say, there's Facebook, there's email, there's texting, and great as they are, I think the veneer is pretty thin, and you can also be really whoever you want to be. Also, I wanted to hear my children actually LOL, not just read it in a text, you know, and you only do that in face-to-face conversation. With our busy lifestyles these days, I think, sadly, sitting down and having a good old-fashioned conversation is often seen as almost a waste of time because our talk tends to be about scheduling, what we've got to do next. The family dinner is largely out the window in many, many households because it just doesn't work. So this was a way of kind of recreating the old sit around the kitchen table and finding out what our nearest and dearest, as well as those we may have only just met, really think.
Okay, and the art of conversation has a lot of ideas, which we'll get to. What is conversation in your view? If it's not some of the things you mentioned, what is it?
What is it? Well, what it's not is a monologue delivered in front of a witness. And, you know, I think that's the important thing, that it's not only being an effective talker, it's being an effective listener. And one of my favourite parts in the guidebook for the children's, because we've got six different titles, the children's and family one is probably my very favourite. The guidebook starts off, listening is not just being quiet while the other person is talking. It's not just sitting there thinking up what you're going to say next or trying to come up with a smart, witty response. It's actually listening effectively and trying to empathise, trying to imagine what that person was saying. But what we found in our testing was that people actually listen much, much better to somebody else if they know for sure that they are going to get a turn at speaking.
Right. So you have come up with basically a series of cards that give people conversation starters, haven't you?
We have. And there are some conversation starters that are very, very lame, Jim, and I'm sure you've heard some of them. We brainstormed ours over probably 2 years for the first edition, and we also work with co-writers to develop the specialist titles. So we do work with some other experts. But what we found when we researched it was that some of the things you might imagine make a great conversation actually don't go anywhere and they don't lead any deeper. And they're not nosy questions. We didn't want people to be put on the spot or to be uncomfortable, or we didn't particularly want to pry. You know, it's not about revealing all your innermost secrets. It's just opening those channels of communications and letting things flow. So some things people aren't going to tell you. You know, a question that I really kind of quite liked but nobody ever wanted to answer me was, what's the most illegal thing you've ever done? And not many people are going to tell you that. And so that didn't work. That was out. But a question even like a time that you've been really, really cold, or the longest you've been without sleep, a lot of these things can lead to some nice revelations. And we kind of based it on Trivial Pursuit, except you already know all the answers because it's about you. Most people's favourite subject, I've got to add.
Yes, of course. But I got the illegal question not so long ago too. But of course, it may be all about you, but there are some things people don't want to say, and you've thought long and hard about that.
We have, and we've tried that. In fact, I think that question was changed, because on every card there are three questions. So the first one's kind of very light, second one a little bit more, third one a little deeper. So there's some things within the rules so you can tweak the conversation. But I think that illegal one was changed to something like, what would you do if you were sure you could get away with it?
Yeah, it's not a bad one. Mm. Other questions? And obviously, you know, you put a lot of thought into what would work most. Let's go through a few of them. So are they all essentially questions that you could be comfortable with children in the room, including young people, and it's essentially a family conversation?
Very much it is. I mean, we say sex, politics, religion, they're not in it. Having said that, you know, some people can bring in those subjects very effectively into any conversation, and that's theirs. I mean, there's something in the children's game which says, you know, the most fun you've ever had with a stranger, or something that's fun to do that doesn't cost any money. There are lots of things. People's interpretations up to them. But the children's one we were very, very particular about, because we didn't want to make any assumptions that children lived in a home with both a mother and a father. So we don't really talk about that. We didn't make any assumptions that a child necessarily lived in a stable home, didn't assume that they were living with a birth parent, none of that. But the children's questions are just so revealing, and they work so well that it's quite exciting, because, as you may know, when we pick up our children from school and we see them, the common easy question that comes out of our mouths is, what did you do at school today, or how was school? And the answer to that is nothing, not much good, isn't it? It's not usually a question that's asked. It's not the right question, not the right time. But we like the idea of two-way communication with our children, and believe that we have an awful lot to learn from listening to children. And if we listen to them, they will then do us the honour of listening to us. So we get our point out too.
I can see the sense of that. What would you ask a child who walks in the door and puts the school bag down then?
What, you're hungry?
But
that usually gets a yes.
True. But I mean, you wouldn't ask, How was school? Because you get the grunt.
You get the grunt. And so, you probably know yourself, Jim, when you come home and if you've had a stressful day and your wife ever says, how was work? I mean, you know, it's not the time to expand on it, is it? And I think that's another reason we need to develop the art of conversation, because we're so time poor. But children and us too, we're really not ready to discuss things until later that night over the dinner table when someone says, oh, you know, so-and-so got into trouble today, or I fell asleep in the library, or that's when we get the news. It's about quantity of time that we spend together.
Yes, that's true. That's absolutely true. And that's when we get the news. You're quite right. Mm. So some of the questions you ask, is there a person who you owe a thank you to?
Yes. And that can be quite surprising, and it also causes us to reflect a little, and that answer is going to change, isn't it, over time? So it's not like something you use once and then you know the answers, because I might owe you a thank you today, and I might owe my next door neighbour a thank you the next day, you know. And the stories behind why you owe that thank you.
Yes, no, they make
quite
you
interesting.
They make you think, questions like that, and usefully so. An issue with which you've changed. An issue which you've changed your mind about. I think that's the way it's phrased, is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's interesting too, because when we think about communication being so important to fertilise and nurture our relationships, we're quite proud that our resources are being used in anti-bullying programs, for example, because we believe that if we've communicated and we understand why somebody's behaving the way they do, then we're more likely to have empathy. And if we've got empathy, then we're not going to bully, or we're not going to talk badly about a person or a minority group, you know, or a group in society from which we may not have any particular friends. So we make these judgments, you know.
What if you let it could become an idol? That's an interesting question.
It is, and I suspect you've taken that one from maybe the one for Christians and those exploring, but I mean, I think our material world.
It's a good question anyway.
You know, it is, because I think we all have that, don't we? And sadly, looking beneath, thinking that material things are going to make our lives fulfilling, material things are certainly a big idol in many people's lives, mine included, I guess.
Do you ever celebrate ordinary events? When were you the most cold? Mm. That's a good one. When were you the most sleep deprived? How would you like someone to spoil you for a day?
That's a great question, and I love that. I'm sure you've been to those corporate training days where you're going to do some seminar and then they say at the start, let's really get to know each other now before we get going on the work. Let's go around the circle and say your name and tell us a little bit about yourself. Have you been to those?
Oh, it's vile, isn't it?
Terrible. Whereas if we go, okay, everybody tell me how someone could spoil you for the day, I'm going to remember that. And you know, this might be the place to bring it in, Jim, and I hope you're not annoyed with me for saying it, but I remember speaking to you years and years ago when this was an idea. And you know,
yes.
I remember a question about, simple question that you'd think, well, so what, who cares, about do you have a favourite cup or plate, and you picked up a mug on your desk, and I'm wondering if it's still right there.
You're clairvoyant as well.
And you told me that had been with you through all your jobs, and I remember that. Now, if we'd looked out the window and had a chat about the weather, much as I would remember your good looks, charm, all of that, I wouldn't remember that conversation, but because it was a broader topic, I really do, and I thought, I wonder if he's still got that mug.
No, currently I've got a Barack Obama mug saying yes, saying yes we can.
Okay, so the old one must have expired because it had been a lot of places.
I feel a great regret for that old mug now. You've made me quite emotional.
Yes, you were attached to it. And then I think you said to me, oh, I don't usually reveal so much about myself, you know, so it's a nice thing and it's not a threatening subject, but it's a connection, you know.
It's a connection. Mm. You know, Jeff of Wairu on the text says, Jim, I'd love to be asked how my day went. You see, these questions are wasted on the young, aren't they? He's quite right.
He's right.
So who worked on the questions with you?
Oh, well, Keith and I did the all ages, but really the people who worked on the questions were our core group of testers. So we had a fabulous group of children aged from 4 to 44 working on the children's, and questions like, when does somebody become old? We find out if that works because of responses that we get, you know. But with the travel, we had a travel editor work on that one with us. With food, we had a well-known Sydney food writer who I'm going to have to contact and say, I'm sorry, Sydney, about your oysters, but the ones here are about a million times better. We had a literary professor work on the one about books and reading, because we want to make sure that we get to the nitty-gritty. But probably the important thing to know about The Art of Conversation is that it isn't a quiz. It's never, never, never about who knows the most. So there's no right, wrong. There's no correcting somebody else. And it's about creating a balanced and an interesting conversation. And for once, hearing from perhaps the quieter people and also letting the talkers have a little break from always talking. Because I imagine someone in your position is, people feel a sense of relief when they invite you to a social function because you can carry out a conversation and make everybody feel comfortable and you're a great communicator. So they go, oh, great, Jim's coming, you know, he's good value, and they all relax. And I think as a person who's relied upon to always talk and communicate, you may sometimes feel like sitting back and letting other people do that for you. And the quiet people, sometimes we just don't hear from them at all.
Yes, I think you've elevated my social worth more well, than reality actually would have it. But no, I take your point. You know, so it equalises people. Yes. And it's a good fun idea. And it's in bookshops, isn't it, The Art of Conversation? And how is it working for you? I mean, how has the concept been taken up? Because I presume you've gone international with it now too.
We have gone international and we've done some translations. And, I mean, Keith and I funded this ourselves. We started with that one title. Now it's six. And we've just, all we thought was, let's do it to satisfy ourselves. If it works, if other people like it and they want it and enjoy it, then we'll make it a little bit bigger and we'll expand it. And that's really how it's worked over the last 6 years. So that's a very exciting thing for us, because it's nice to know you're not alone, and it's really lovely to get feedback from people who say, thank you, this has saved my marriage, or, you know, this has helped my daughter make friends at school. All that sort of feedback really inspires us. It's quite a labour of love.
It's probably saved a few families, I think. In terms of encouraging the sorts of conversational topics that people would never have thought of themselves. So it's probably very valuable in that sense. Do you subscribe, because we talked a lot about the tech in the intro before we came to you.
Yes.
Do you subscribe to this contradiction that people perceive now, that the more connected we become electronically, you know, the lonelier we are?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I want to hear people LOL. I don't want to read it in a text, you know.
Yeah.
And I think even though they're very useful, they can't replace face-to-face, because as we know, I'm sure we've all misinterpreted emails, it's often not so much what you say, it's how you say it, and the emotion and congruence of that and the expression is missing from digital techno. I mean, I'm sure Shakespeare could probably have written a 140-character tweet and gotten his meaning across perfectly, but most of us are not that literate. And the sad thing is, we need language to develop literacy skills. And the less language we have, the less literate we're going to be. So our meanings and our concepts are going to become less and less. Because even at university level now, they're finding that many students enrolled in university have a working vocabulary of about 800 words. And this is very, very small compared to generations ago, because children learn language from one-on-one conversation with adults. And they are getting less and less of that than ever before in general.
I'm also interested in that research which says that there's been a big decrease in the confidants we have, the people we can really talk to and have conversations with. Mm. And it's just gradually gone down and down and down. You know, you used to be able to count the numbers of your really good friends on two hands, and people are doing it these days on two or three fingers.
That's a very, very good point. And I don't know about in New Zealand, but at home, even that let's drop over somewhere for a cup of tea is so much more formalised that you might ring or be invited. And the drop-in has kind of gone a lot, even in regional Australia. And it's because you think, I don't want to waste their time. They're probably busy.
Yeah.
But what is really more important than nurturing our relationships? And as you say, having a confidant, it's not that difficult. You just need to spend some time and connect on a real level.
There is that sense, isn't there, these days, of not wanting to intrude on other people. So you feel quite safe doing it as long as it's electronically, as long as it's an email or a Facebook message or whatever. You aren't really bothering them. You're giving them the convenience.
Well, that's right, isn't it?
But at the same time, you're losing out the contact.
You're losing out on that. And then when there's a tragedy or, you know, something awful happens to somebody or there's a suicide, people go, oh, gosh, if only we had known they felt like that.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
I'm not saying we should be sticking our nose in everywhere, but I think it's our business to make sure that the people around us are okay. And I think in terms of our children, the most valuable skill we can give them, you know, we teach them history dates, we teach them the names of rivers, all this stuff. We never really formally teach them good communication skills. And yet that is going to be probably the key thing we can give them for a happy, successful life.
Well, if at the end of a family dinner you have stopped a whole host of children from diving for their screens and instead caused them to answer interesting questions, you've done a very good deed, haven't you?
And the children love it, and that's the best bit. Even the screen addicted ones, and I'm really tough. I said, this is how I want my family to be. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, no screens. They're just not on. And sometimes that's so difficult because you get home and you're exhausted and you think, oh, I'll flick on that telly. But we stuck to it. And children love this because really all they want is to be heard. Like all of us, they want to be heard and they want to be understood. And they will reach for this pack of cards if you're at the other end and going to share that with them much more quickly. We did make it into an app, though, because you know how kids love fiddling on iPhones.
There's an irony right there, yeah.
You know, but as long as they do it in the room with you, well, that's great. It's a connection.
Lovely to talk to you. I'm glad it's doing so well, and thank you for giving us your time.
Thank you so much, Jim. I've had a great time with you.
Louise Howland, The Art of Conversation.